Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Piano Podcast. My name is Garrett, and thank you for listening. I have a quick question for you guys in the YouTube comments. If you would please let me know. Like, what do you think of the podcast? Like, give me constructive criticism. I really would like to make the podcast better for you guys, and the only way I can do that is by helping you guys out. Helping me out is to give me criticism and think anything I can fix. I think I do need editing, but like, I'm talking about the overall content of the podcast. I typically enjoy talking. Like, I enjoy talking about the piano and classical music, because I'm a nerd at that, and so literally no one cares about that type of stuff. So it's really nice to talk about it and hopefully gain an audience for it. I really am happy with doing it, and even though a lot of people came to my channel, the 70 people that I have came from my gaming stuff that I used to do, and to be honest, I actually would love to do more gaming. I would enjoy it, but the problem is my computer is terrible. But luckily, I think for Christmas I might get a MacBook, or maybe next year, or like 2021, or possibly like maybe soon, because there's like a big sale going on for students, and I might want to grab one. Excuse the water. I'm sorry about that. And I really would like to pick one up, so that hopefully I can make way better content for you guys in the future, and really just make it all a better show. I mean, it would be really cool if I can get like a cool secondary angle, maybe like on top of the keyboard, so then like you can actually see it. And also another thing I want to mention, once again, I updated the audio quality, so it should be almost perfectly silent now, and there's less bass now, so this is kind of my natural voice, the way it is. I don't do any alterations, because in the end, I was like, maybe I can make my voice to sound lower, but I realized, you know what, just let the people hear my low testosterone voice the way it is, and whatever, people will like it. I mean, it's my voice, I can't change it. Let's see. And anything else I want to touch up on? I made a poll on Twitter. I'm in need of some composing motivation at the moment, and I would really appreciate it if you were to, like, put down the response on the Twitter poll. Basically, I just said why, but, I'm thinking about writing the exercise book. That's one of the options on there. And I have a couple of exercises already in mind that are really helpful for me and could possibly be more helpful for you. And this book will be public because it'll be on Noteflight. This episode's not sponsored, but I mean, I could get it, but I have to do credit card stuff, and I don't want to deal with that at the moment. But, I actually could get this I could start making money by doing this podcast, but I don't want to right now, because, I don't know, like, the amount, I think I get, like, 15 cents per viewer, so, and it's usually around 20 to 30 per viewer, so I would get maybe, like, $1 or something like that, so, for per podcast, it's not really, I don't think it's worth it yet. Or maybe, I don't know, we'll see. But, I really, just want to say thank you for listening, so far this season has been successful, and I've been doing it almost every week. Technically it's a day, a week and a day, but who really cares? All right, enough talk about nonsense. Let's talk about piano and classical podcasts. And yes, we're back to actually having a keyboard on hand. All right. So the first thing that we're going to talk about is how to bring out voices when you're playing. And I have another idea after this. I have like a set of notes. So I remember what to talk about. And so we're gonna talk. Yeah, let's talk about voices. So, in certain music, when there's a lot of things going on, you want to bring out certain things. Okay, we got that set up pretty well. Let's move this up here. Oh, there's one more thing I mentioned before we start. I really apologize. I have a pop filter on. So the YouTube thing, which you should definitely subscribe, Garrett K. Oh my God, I swear to God. I have a pop filter. So I guess a part of my face would be covered up, but not a whole lot. And it kind of rejects the p and the b sounds a lot cleaner than this thing. And this thing doesn't even fit on my mic, so I think I'm just going to stop using that thing altogether and just use this, because it works way better. And you can hear a bit more of my voice way clear. Alright, so generally, this is like, I actually learned this, I think I learned this when I moved my new teacher. I was playing a piece, and it was Minuet in Rondo form by, I believe, Rameau. And she was like, what are you doing? And I was playing the piece fine, and I was like, oh, what am I doing wrong? And she says, try to bring out your voice. And like, what the hell is that? How do I do that? I don't know how. Wait. Or something like that. I was playing. And she was like, no. You have to get more weight on your right hand or something like that. And basically let be out more. And so eventually I realized, well, just make your left hand quieter. And so it was really hard the first couple of times to try, because it's like, how do I get independence of the hands? And that's what one of the great things about Bach's music is that it does that flawlessly, trains their independence. So that's why whenever you, like I said on the previous podcast, when you practice, or maybe this is the first one, always have at least one piece of Bach when you're ready to have a piece of Bach. As soon as you're good enough to play the inventions, at least be learning one invention at all times. It's just necessary to be a good pianist. Anyways, so eventually I learned that it was like, instead of, it was, and so you hear a voice, you hear a melody, and that's what you're trying to do. For example, instead of hearing, you're supposed to sound like this, like just kind of loosen up your left hand, put a bit more weight and like loudness on your right, and something like that. So I got a great example. I mean, I have two. One I'm gonna play fully, the other I'm just gonna give you a little demonstration. So let's go to Bach. So, one of the first invention I ever learned, and this is the only invention I ever learned actually, because right now I'm working on a sinfonia, which is three voices. I'll play that in a little bit. Here it goes. Here's a little bit of the D minor for the fourth invention, D minor. Goes a bit like this. And thank you. But yeah, that's and that's how you get a voice out. So you can clearly hear something like that. And you need to have that independence in order to be a pianist at all. You can't just go your entire career just playing both hands equally. It's just not possible. And I mean, Bach's kind of a special case because and this is a topic I'm gonna get into a bit later in the podcast, but interpretations, because interpretations, as soon as you get good enough, you have an idea of what you want the music to be. But we'll talk about that a bit later. But for now, and here's a little bit of the Boxophonia. Now, this is not the natural keyboard I play every day. I'm playing my baby grand, which is way heavier and bigger keys. This is plastic. So my fingers tend to slip. And the my piano, I don't think it's ivory, but it's like way better built plastic, not this plastic. Here it goes. So a bit, a very bit of the first Sinfonia. Like a little tiny bit. I barely know any of it, and also, I'm playing it slow because I barely know. I don't even know why. I'm not good enough, but you can see where I'm getting at. I mean, if I go, actually, I didn't even introduce the third voice. So you can hear the three voices kind of singing at the same time. That's what the I mean, in other words, for a sinfonia, it's a three-part invention. Each part is a voice. So the two-part inventions, the D minor is the two-part invention. You heard two voices. You can here anymore, but anyways, I and it's, and but this is the best example of voices. So there's really four voices in this piece. It's not a Bach piece. It's a piece by Grieg, a piece called Arietta. It's absolutely beautiful. So you're supposed to hear. Wait. And all in this, and while that's going on is, so it can't just be like, it's supposed to be like this. So Yeah, so when you listen to this performance, and hopefully it's a good one, try to listen to the main melody line, and really try to track it down at, in front of all the in front of the arpeggiation. So yeah, you can hopefully you could clearly hear. Now when my pedal system was being really kind of wonky because there's a chord under there and another here's a Garrett's pro musician tip. I would play like a musical theme. I don't know what to play. There we go. It is important to make your cables organized. Cause it will save you a lot of trouble. It'll save you a lot of pain and suffering. I just realized something about the podcast. I've been wearing a white shirt every single episode. I don't know why. Like, literally, like, this is the same shirt I wore in the first one, the second season, and I don't know why. It's just been coincidental that I've been wearing a white shirt. Maybe next time I'll get a white shirt. That'll be really funny. Anyways, so hopefully you got a bit of, hopefully you got that pretty good. So now we're gonna finally talk about that composer I've been teasing for two episodes. like I said, he composed Prometheus Poem of Fire, Ennea Synesthesia. It's my boy Alexander Scriabin. Let's go. So that's pretty cringe. Whatever. Okay. So. Alexander Scriabin, he was born 25th of December. Oh, he's born on Christmas, 1871, and he died. Hold on, it's kind of weird. Because there's multiple sources. Some say he was born the 6th of January, 1872. While, wait, what does OS mean? Old style, so there's old style dates and new style dates apparently, but he was born on January 6, 1872 and died the 27th of April 1915. And he was a Russian composer and a pianist. He was a great pianist. He was influenced earlier in his life by Chopin. And he composed works that were characterized by tonality. He was a very tonal composer in his early days. Now, I don't know any early Scriabin, but later in his life, he basically became atonal. He was like, he completely changed. Like, if you listen to one of his earliest works and listen to one of his latest works, then he'll be like, oh my god, what happened to him? But no, he had a philosophy called theology and a mysticism, which actually, let's look up mysticism. So, mysticism is the practice of religious ecstasies, religious experiences during alternate states of consciousness, together with whatever ideologies, ethics, rites, myths, legends, and magic may be related to them. It may also refer to the attainment of insight in ultimate or hidden truths, and to the human transformation supported by various practices and experiences. That is pretty cool. That is really, really cool. I can't really, I would show you. Oh, no, but, like, no, okay. So, he was born on Christmas 1871 and died on April 14th, 1915, age 43. You know, it's weird because all these composers, they die really early. Like, I guess I guess most of the composers die very young for some reason. At least the good ones. I mean, Leonard Bernstein, he was a great composer, but he died when he was, like, 72. So... But, So, Leo Tolstoy, the author, he was a very famous, he loved Scriabin's music. He even described it as a sincere expression of genius. And so, he actually had a really big impact on later Russian composers. Actually, not too far off his, like, later years, like his death. Specifically, Stravinsky, Prokofiev, Nikolai Rozvoltsev, or... That guy, I really don't, I don't know that guy. Let's see, he, 23rd, 1880. That's very weird. And I think they meant to say, Rimsky-Korsakov. But it was very important to the Russians, Scriabin's music. It was very important to the Russian nationalism period. However, Scriabin's importance in the Russian and then Soviet musical scene and internationally drastically declined after his death. According to his biographer, Bowers, no one was more famous during their lifetime and fewer were more quickly ignored after their death. Nevertheless, his music aesthetics have been re-evaluated, and his 10 published sonatas for piano, which arguably provided the most consistent contribution to the genre since the time of Beethoven's set, have been increasingly championed. I've actually never listened to one of his sonatas, which I think I'm going to. Actually, yes, I have. I've listened to his second sonata, his fantasy sonata. It's good. I mean, the second movement is awesome. The first movement is, like, boring or okay. All right, so we're going to talk about his biography, like his life. So, he was actually born to a Russian noble family. Let's see. He was part of a noble family. Let's see. So, let's skip. Let's see. So, as a child, he was frequently exposed to piano playing. And anecdotal references describe him demanding that his aunt played for him. So apparently he actually built pianos after being fascinated with the mechanism. And so he sometimes gave away pianos he had built to house guests. Luibov portrays Scriabin as very shy and unsociable with his peers, but appreciative of adult attention. Another anecdote tells of Scriabin trying to conduct an orchestra composed of local children, an attempt that ended in frustration and tears. He would perform his own amateur plays and operas with puppets to willing audiences. He studied the piano from an early age, taking lessons from Nikolai Severev, I think, hopefully I'm pronouncing that correctly, a strict disciplinarian who is also the teacher of Sergei Rachmaninoff. Though Scriabin was not a penseur like Rachmaninoff. So, yeah, Scriabin and Rachmaninoff were besties, are really good friends. So, let's see. So, he became a noted pianist despite his small hands, which could barely stretch to a ninth. So, he has around the same hands that I do. Although, I can stretch to a ninth. That's a ninth, by the way. I mean, like, I can't really stretch that much to a tenth, but I can stretch. It's kind of hard, but I can stretch to a ninth. Feeling challenged by Joseph Levine, who is a very famous pianist, he damaged his right hand while practicing Franz Liszt, reminiscent of the Don Juan. And Millie Bick, ugh, I can't even pronounce that name, holy crap. Balakiriev? Islami. His doctor said he would never recover, and, aw, sucks. And he wrote his first large-scale masterpiece, his Piano and Sonata, first sonata, as a cry against God, against fate. It was his third sonata to be written, but the first to which he gave an opus number. His second was condensed and released at the Allegro Appassionato Opus 4. He eventually regained the use of his hand. 1892, he graduated. But he'd never completed a composition degree. Scriabin made his debut as a pianist in St. Petersburg, performing his own works to a positive reviews. This guy named Belyaev agreed to pay Scriabin to compose for his publishing company. God, I wish someone could do that with me. Let me know. Let's see. He published works by notable composers such as Korsakov and Glazunov. So during this period, he was touring in Russia and abroad in around 1898. During this period, he composed a cycle of etudes, opus 8, several sets of his preludes, his first three sonatas, and his only piano concerto, among other works mostly for piano. Sorry if you heard those crack, I just cracked my neck. For a period, about 5 years. Oh, God. My neck hurts. Scriabin was based in Moscow, during which time the first two of his symphonies were conducted by his old teacher, Safonov. According to later reports, between 1901 and 1903, Scriabin envisions writing an opera. He talked a lot about it. The work was centered around a nameless hero, philosopher, musician, poet, among other things. He would declare, "I am the apotheosis of world creation. I am the aim of aims, the end of ends." the poem Opus number 32, number 2, and the poem Tragic, Opus 34, were originally conceived as arias in the opera. By the winter of 1904, Scriabin and his wife had relocated to Switzerland. While he began work on the composition of his third symphony, where Scriabin was now accompanied by Tatiana Vlaha, Schulzauer, I guess he switched over wives, I guess. He had children, Julian Scriabin, a Preciosius, I don't know how to say that, composer of several piano works before he drowned in the Dnieper River at age 11. Actually, let's take a little break and look at his son. Let's see. He was himself a promising composer and pianist, but he died at the age of 11 of drowning. So, in the last year of his life, he wrote four preludes in his father's style, the authorship of which is questioned by some researchers. Those preludes were published for the first time in 95 years after his death. Musicologists have described Julian Scriabin as both a successor of his father and an early representative of early Russian and Soviet avant-garde of the 1920s. Dude, I wish he didn't drown, because, oh my god, that would have been cool to have another Scriabin. Alexander Scriabin is famous for something. Yeah, he has seven children. By the time the death of Leo, I think one of his sons, the composer had already been living for several years with Schulzauer and had become estranged from his first family, so much so that the parents did not even meet at the burial of their son. Oh, that sucks. Okay, so he came back to Russia after his tour. So this is about the time where he got kind of weird. In 1909, he returned to Russia permanently, where he continued to compose, working on increasingly bigger projects. Before his death, he had planned a multimedia work to be formed in the Himalaya Mountains that would cause a so-called Armageddon, a grandiose religious synthesis of all arts, which would be herald the birth of a new world. Scriabin only left sketches for this piece. Mysterium, although a preliminary part named L'Acte Préalable, Prefatory Action, was eventually made into a performable version by Alexander Nemitin. Parts of that unfinished composition with the performed title, Prefatory Action, by Vladimir Ashenki, a good pianist and conductor, I guess, with Aleksey Lubomenov at the piano. Nemitin eventually completed the second portion, Mankind, and the third, Transfiguration, and his entire 2.5-hour completion was recorded by Decca, which is a good recording company. Several late pieces published during the composer's lifetime are believed to have been intended for Mysterium, like the two dances, Opus 73. Scriabin was small and reportedly frail throughout his life, and in 1915, at the age of 43, he died in Moscow from sepsis as a result of a sore on his upper lip. Let's see what sepsis is. Life-threatening condition that arises from the body caught infection. He got an infection on his upper lip. Immediately upon Scriabin's sudden death, Rachmaninoff, his bud, toured Russia in a series of all Scriabin recitals. It was the first time he had played other music other than his own in public in an effort to help secure Scriabin's reputation as a great composer. Alright, so, let's see. I guess I'm going to talk about some of his music and my opinion of them. So, a great piece if you like, romantic, later romantic music is, his Etude Opus 8, number 12 in D flat minor. Or no, D sharp minor, sorry. It's an awesome piece. I don't know why he wrote and did that. He could have just wrote in E flat minor, but whatever. Like his the work is really cool, and I highly suggest you listen to it. And also, like I said, listen to the Sonata Fantasy, Movement 2. Another good piece by him, this is a bit later, is a couple pieces. A Poem of Ecstasy, one of my favorites, I think, or maybe, no, my favorite Scriabin piece, Prometheus Poem of Fire, that's why I gave one of the hints, and a piece that I'm going to, at least a fragment of it, that I'm going to play for you guys now. This is a piece, called Désir, the part of a two, is called, the pieces are Do Morco, or two pieces, Opus 57. The other was Carré Dansé, and I would love to learn it, but I can't really find the music for it. So, as a result, I just know the Désir. But it's still an interesting piece of music. Now, I'm going to only play the couple bits of it, because I actually have a recording of me playing the entire thing on YouTube. If you you can try to find it. I'm not going to give you any hints, but try to find it. But I play it from the entirety there, but I really don't. I kind of forgot a bit of it now, so I haven't played it in a long time. But the harmonies are really interesting, and I really enjoyed this piece a lot. So here's a little bit, just a little bit, and then we're going to talk a bit about his, I think we're going to stop talking about Scriabin, because I want to get to another thing about music. So here's a little bit as a concluding to the Scriabin talk, a little bit of Désir Opus 56. Hope you guys enjoy. It's a pretty short piece, but I kind of forgot the ending. I'm really sorry, you guys. I'm really sorry. I just kind of forgot about it, but... Oh, God. Sorry about that. Yeah, that is Scriabin for you. Really interesting character. I would like to mention that he has synesthesia, so... there's a performance on YouTube of Prometheus where you see the colors that he envisioned. He wanted a color keyboard when he was composing the work, but he never got it together before he died. So it's really cool to see what he actually envisioned being put to real life. And I highly suggest you listening to it. Very good piece. All right, let's see. What is next? So, Oh, yeah. So we're going to talk about interpretations. We're going to talk about the interpretations. So let's go back to that Bach invention. This invention can be played in a lot of ways, and you can play around with the phrasing of the piece and the voicing of the piece, like which part you want to highlight. Now, you know, you can't really do dynamics because that's kind of fixed, but I mean, you can still play around dynamics, but that's something that I barely sometimes temper with, but not too much. So there's many different ways that you can interpret it. You can interpret it like this. If you want to shout on your screen, tell me what did you do here that was different from my first performance? Probably wrong, hopefully right. What I heard was a kind of the legato, and you heard a bit more of the bass line. You kind of heard that. So try to guess what I did differently this time now. Shout or whatever. All right. What I did differently? I put staccato on the faster notes and legato on the slower notes. Which is actually in mainstream playing, that's kind of the opposite of what you want to do. You want to have legato on the fast notes. But some pianists, like Glenn Gould, who's my favorite pianist and idol, I think in his recording, he somewhat did that. He's like, let's see. Also, a big interpretation factor is tempi. So, some pianists do it like the way I did, kind of both, like my toso, kind of. Allegretto, kind of like a walking pace. Some pianists kind of like to do it fast. I can't play it fast. Glenn Gould did it fast though. Other pianists can do it slow, like. One of my favorite interpretations of the piece is where I do slow and staccato. So we do it like this, like. Or you can maybe do slow and legato. That's a kind of interesting interpretation, but a lot of pianists have their own interpretation of the music that they want to hear, and, No, I do that a little bit. Like, for example, here's a very specific musical passage. This is the 25th variation of the Goldberg Variation by Bach. Once again, I love Bach. He's like, Bach, Liszt, Bernstein, Stravinsky, they're like the best. And Gould. Gould was also sort of a composer, but those five musicians, those are like my favorites, and those are my idols, basically. Those are like my five Power Rangers of musicians. They're so awesome. And Scriabin's my six. Okay, fine. I'm adding Scriabin because come on, Scriabin was cool. So I got like my six Power Rangers of musicians. It was they're so inspirational to me, and so I in my own compositional, like usually my compositions are very tonal and they're very like for example, here's a passage for one of my etudes. I forgot to add a pedal, my apologies. But then recently, I've been thinking more atonal. Like, for example, I've been playing around the organ a lot. And I've been thinking about doing something like this, where we have like something like weird and cool like that. I personally really find that cool. And I'm definitely gonna do an episode where I talk about my keyboard and all the cool stuff it can do. And I really believe that that in composing there's really no limits. There's really no rules now. Like in Bach's time, there's so many rules and regulations that it was crazy. But like now, you don't have any boundaries. You can write and be allowed to do that. Like you won't, like I mean, of course you'll probably get criticized, but there's a certain group of people who there's certain people out there who love that type of music, like me. Or maybe like something like that. Or something where it's like kind of like something very like atmospheric and something like that. Actually I released a little thing called Atmos. It was a song and it's on the podcast version. There's like a and like there, I made a podcast episode. It's just Atmos. It's like two like a song I made. So after this, maybe you'll listen to it. It's a really interesting, unique song. I played around with GarageBand on my phone, and I basically messed around with the a certain synthesizer and the sustain. Very interesting sound it makes, and I really enjoy listening to it. Now, I don't listen to it all the time because I want like make sure I know that I have regular views still, but really I really enjoyed it. but yeah, guys. So hope you guys enjoyed this episode. Well, it's only 48 minutes. Yeah, I don't feel like talking about a topic. So I in the last season I was talking about the different periods of music that there was, and I never completed it. So in this season, I'm gonna complete the periods of classical music. I already did Baroque. I already did the classical period. I don't think I did Romantic. I'm very sure I did not do Romantic. Although, no, I don't think I did. I'm gonna check right now, but I'm very positive I did not. I did not do that. I did not make that. Yeah. Oh, the last episode was classical period. All right. Yeah. Well, guys, that's the episode. So thank you guys so much for listening. It's a true pleasure. I love doing this. So yeah, like I said, let me know in the YouTube comments below, or possibly in like reviews on the podcasting, whatever site you're on. It's Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever, except SoundCloud, which maybe try to get there. And give me some criticism, or give me, or just let me know how much you enjoy it, or do whatever you want. But just, I just want to know, because I want to make sure you guys are happy with the podcast. I want to make sure you guys are happy with the content that I'm making, because I want to strive for perfection, and I want to strive for ultimate satisfaction with everyone. So, also, if you haven't, subscribe to my YouTube channel, where I do other stuff as well as my podcast, Garrett K. That's my podcast. Channel. Hopefully, I'll get to 100 subscribers soon. Right now I'm on 70 subscribers, or 71. I'm grateful you guys are listening, and thank you so much for watching. And also other stuff we're gonna talk about next time. Phasing, and then atonal music and polytonal music. So this is gonna be kinda fun. So, and maybe we'll, I remember last time I did an episode where I was getting angry trying to talk about Bach. I think I might do another version of that where I don't get angry and talk about Bach. And I'll talk about that. So thank you guys so much for watching and listening. And I'll catch you guys in the next episode. So see ya later.